Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Text Number 52. Anima Adyai Mahima Bhi Aja Adyabhi Vibhuti Bhi Chatu Vimsati Bhi Tatvai Parita Mahatta Bhi. That again. Mahat Adi Bhi. Anima Dhyaya Mahima Bhir. Ajadya Bhir Vibhuti Bhi. Chaturvim Shakti Bistatvai. Parita Mahad Adi Bhi. Anima Dhyaya Mahima Bhir. Ajaya Bir Vibhuti Bhi Chaturvim Shakti Bistatvai Paritha Mahad Adi Bhi Anima Dhyar Mahima Bir Ajadya Bir Vibhuti Bhi Chaturvim Shakti Bistatvai Parita Mahad Adi Bhi. Please chant. Dhyaya Mahima Bhir Ajadya Bhir Vibhuti Bhi Chaturvi Shakti Bistatvai Parita Mahad Adi Bhi of these, please. other on the male side? No? Okay. Anima Adyayi. Headed by Anima. Mahima B. By opulences. Aja Adyabi. Headed by Aja. Vibhuti B. By potencies. Chatu Vimshati B. 24 in number. Tatvai. By elements for the creation of the material world. Purita, all the Vishnu Murtis were surrounded. Mahat Adibi, headed by the Mahat Tattva. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. All the Vishnu Murtis were surrounded by the opulences headed by Anima Siddhi, by the mystic potencies headed by Aja, and by the 24 elements for the creation of the material world headed by the Mahatattva. Purport. In this verse, the word Mahimabhi means Aishvarya or opulence. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can do whatever He likes. That is His Aishvarya, His opulence. No one can command Him, but He can command everyone. Sad Aishvarya Purna. The Lord is full in six opulences. The yoga siddhis, the perfections of yoga, such as the ability to become smaller than the smallest, anima siddhi, or bigger than the biggest, mahima siddhi, are present in Lord Vishnu. Sad Aishvaryai Purno Yahiha Bhagavan, from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 1-3. The word Aja means Maya, or mystic power. Everything mysterious is in full existence in Vishnu. The 24 elements mentioned are the five working senses, Pancha Karmendriya, the five senses for obtaining knowledge, Pancha Gyanendriya, the five gross material elements, Pancha Mahibhuta, the five sense objects, Pancha Tanmatra, the mind or Manas, the false ego Ahankara, the Mahatattva, and material nature Prakriti. All 24 of these elements are employed for the manifestation of the material world. The Mahatattva is divided into different subtle categories, but originally it is called the Mahatattva. Om Akina Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances at His lotus feet. So before commenting on the translation and purport, there are a few items mentioned here in the purport which I would like to just go over, especially for the sake of some of our newer persons and maybe even some of our persons who have been here for some time. Because we may not know the meanings of some of these words. So I'd like to Yeah. The 24 elements mentioned are the five working senses. That's the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the skin. The five senses for obtaining knowledge, pancha gyanendriya, which is the two arms, the two legs, the mouth, the reproductive organs, and the excretory organs. The five gross material elements. Who would like to tell the five gross material elements? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, and what else? Nothing else? Yes, that's fine. The five gross material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. The five sense objects, that's pancha tanmatra. Anybody would like to volunteer for that? Five sense objects, like seeing and hearing. I can't hear you. Yes. The mind, or manas, which has three functions, thinking, feeling, and what's the third one? Willing, yes. The false ego, ahankara, and what does ahankara mean? Raise your hand. What is false ego? Anyone here? Huh? Go ahead. It means what? Not? Yeah, what? Not literally. The meaning that Prabhupada generally gives in his book, ahankara, which means the false ego. So, what does it mean when we speak of false ego? There's a real ego, which is the soul. And what is the false ego? Okay, it is the belief that we are the body, or I am that body. Okay? That's false ego. And the extensions of the false ego are anything that belongs to the body. You have a car, you think you are related, connected to the car. And if anything threatens the car, we feel we are threatened. That's the extension of the false ego. Or our home, or our children, anything that's connected to the body, which is in any way jeopardized or threatened, we feel we are threatened. But if anything which pampers or pleases or soothes the body, or any of the extensions of the body, we feel soothed. We enjoy that. We feel satisfied by that. For example, a person sees our new car, and a person says, oh, what a beautiful car that is. So we feel very happy. I'm not saying everybody here, but generally speaking, we feel happy because, in effect, we're feeling or thinking that he's praising me. Actually, it's just a piece of metal, and in a few years it'll be a piece of junk. But we feel, and we won't want to identify with it at that time, when it's just junk. But presently it's brand new, it's shining, it's sparkling in the sunshine, and it's praise. We feel praised. When we feel praised, we feel good. And that's because the essential or basic motivation we all have is to be a lord in this world. And being a lord means several things. Feeling important, feeling valuable, feeling glorious, feeling laudable or applaudable, being revered or looked up to, being honored, being celebrated. These are all instrumentations of lordship. In other words, we get to feel we're bigger, better, greater, higher, grander than perhaps others who are inferior. In other words, a sense of lordship means to feel superior to others who are less capable or less able. So, lordship is what people come into this world for. And when we get an opportunity to feel lordship, that makes us happy. And when we have perhaps not an opportunity to feel that we are not a lord, or perhaps somebody threatens our lordship, insults us, looks down upon us, condemns us, perhaps injures us, harms us, this is a takedown to our lordship. It means that we are less than perhaps what we thought we were. So lordship means going up, up, up materially, and removing lordship means goes down, down, down materially. So this is an important principle. It governs the life of every person living in the material world. The object or target or goal of the devotee is to destroy this false ego, so that the real ego can shine and manifest its true glory, which it receives from the super soul. So this false ego is always, it's like a balloon. It loves to be inflated. Give me more. More praise, more honor, more applause. I love what I'm hearing. So that, is, of course, is destructive to a devotee. A devotee considers these things as totally, not only worthless for himself, but deserving to the Supreme Lord, who is truly fit to receive all that glorification, because the source of all opulence is the Supreme Lord, as we see in this particular chapter and in this particular part of the book. So God deserves it all. And thus when a devotee receives this adoration, this distinction, this glorification, this prophet, this celebrity, what does he do? How does he deal with this? A devotee deals with this by actually disengaging his mind from it. In other words, instead of when he receives these honors and distinctions and glorification and praises, instead of keeping them, as so many of our leaders in the past had done, and poisoning, literally poisoning the soul by putting more and more covering over the soul, which made it more and more illusion. Instead of doing that, what the devotee does is that he, instead of doing that, when he receives the praise, when the honor comes to him, when the distinction and glorification comes to him, in his mind, he considers this to not be his. This belongs to Krishna. The only reason I'm manifesting it is because Krishna is enabling me to. He's allowing me to. He's arranging for me to. And therefore, I accept it on his behalf, on my spiritual master's behalf. And so be it. It's yours, Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, being so humble, will accept it from me and then give it on to Krishna, who is the source of all opulence. As Krishna says, I'm the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their heart. So, as it says, Krishna is the source of all of these. A devotee may say, I am nothing except to Krishna, except what you make me. I have nothing except what you give me. I know nothing except what you teach me. I want nothing except pure love of your lotus feet. For then I will have everything and even more. So the devotee ascribes all this opulence, all this good, all this glorification. Krishna, that is yours. And when we do that, and it must be done firmly because we love the idea of holding on to it, because it gives us that sense of lordship. I'm great, I'm big, I'm wonderful, I'm this. But for the devotee, no. We want to develop pure love of Krishna. How can I develop love for Krishna if I'm in competition with Krishna? If I'm keeping what belongs to his? I remember at my talk that I had, was at Alachua, and I had finished the class and I had spoken on the same things that I'm speaking of now. And so one of the devotees, he raised his hand and he said, well, I can appreciate what you're saying, but can't we keep just a little bit? So I responded by saying, do you want to steal from Krishna just a little bit? Is there any value in stealing from your father, from your source, from your provider? Does that make sense? Would you steal from your father? Would you steal from your mother? Of course you wouldn't. So why do you want to steal and keep it? Because you want to keep the false ego and you want to feel, quote, good about yourself. That's not really good. Interpretation means bad about yourself, but you don't know this because you're in Maya. And when we come out of Maya, we realize all those things belong to Krishna. And while they are good, they're useful, they're beneficial, but to Krishna. I note in the Catholic tradition that their philosophy is a little bit different. They just generally hate the material world. Everything is bad. When I read that, I think, no, everything isn't bad. Because everything that's in this world, first of all, it's of Krishna. It's of God. And second of all, it can be used in God's wonderful, glorious service. So why is it bad? A knife can be good or bad according to how we use it. If we use the knife to cut bread, it's good. If we use the knife to cut someone's throat in murder, it's bad. So everything depends in the material world on how we use it. And that's what we always have to be concerned about. This is the process of discrimination. Knowing what is useful, what is not useful. What is good, what is bad. What has value, what has no value. What is harmful, what is helpful. So this is the process of purification. As a devotee becomes more and more purified, he gains that discriminatory knowledge from Krishna, who's in the heart. To those who are constantly devoted to serving with love, I give them the understanding by which they may come to me. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So Krishna dispels the darkness. He's there. And the more effort we make, the more we pray, the more we beg Krishna, please, I am dumb, I am stupid, I am fallible, I make mistakes, I cheat, I'm in illusion, I have imperfect senses, I'm totally worthless without your help. And as soon as I think I don't need your help, I'm really in trouble. So the devotee, and as we can see from the wonderful prayers throughout the Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are always in this mood, in this position, that they feel stupid, they feel dumb, they feel irresponsible. But that's why they depend so firmly, so intensely on the mercy of God. As soon as we start to think of ourselves as great, as wonderful, as glorious, we're in trouble. Because we no longer want to depend upon God. We want others to depend upon us. And if we want others to depend upon us, then we're in the lordship position, which will not last very long. Certainly we'll die with the body. And most likely we would die far long before the body dies. So it is not useful to be in this lordship position. However, sometimes you can't avoid it. Some of us has gifted intelligence, gifted abilities. So how can we help? People are going to praise us. People are going to honor us. People are going to glorify us. So what do we do? Say, no. Prabhupada never said like that. Anytime Prabhupada received the praises, he nodded his head and offered it off to his Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. When anyone offered Prabhupada a gift, he said, no, I don't need the gift. He accepted everything as coming from Krishna. And he used that, of course, if it was favorable or beneficial, and then he would use it in whatever way he could to serve the Supreme Lord. If a person would offer him $10,000, he wouldn't say, no, I don't need the money. He would accept it. and then go ahead and use it to print books or build temples. So this is a good use of the material world. And this is the glory, this is the wonder, this is the greatness of our philosophy, that everything essentially can be used in Krishna's service. The only question is, are we really using it in Krishna's service? So now we come to this particular verse. An amazing thing has happened. Lord Brahma, who attempted to mystify Krishna by comparing his mystic power with Krishna's mystic power by stealing the cowherd boys and the calves, with the intention of trying to find out if after he stole them and hid them and put them in a trance, would Krishna find them? Well, if Krishna would find them, then he would feel that Krishna's mystic power is equal to Brahma's mystic power. And if he didn't find them, then he would continue to have this doubt that is this little cute, lovable, adorable, huggable, embraceable little boy, is he really the Supreme Lord? I mean, he looks so fragile. He looks so small. He looks so tiny. He's only 5 or 6 years old. Is he really? He's under Yoga Maya at this time. Brahma normally knows who Krishna is. But under Yoga Maya, he's under illusion. And he begins to think things which are not true. That's the nature of being an illusion. You think things that are not true, but think they are true. So therefore, Brahma would get to see if Krishna found the boys and calves, then his mystic power was certainly equal to mine and perhaps even greater. And if not, then he's just an ordinary boy. So what happened is, as we can see, Krishna mystified Brahma. He bewildered Brahma. He put him into this yoga maya, this illusion. And Brahma, after he came back after 1 year of his, 1 second of his time, 1 year of our time, he came back after he went to Brahmaloka and back. And he went and he looked for the calves and the boys. And he saw them resting in the cave, and then he came out to the riverside and he saw them there. They were playing. He couldn't figure it out. How could they be here and there at the same time? I won't go into the details there, except to say that he became more and more confused. So if that wasn't enough, Krishna then turned all of these himself, who was all these cowherd boys, was Krishna. He had turned himself into that earlier, into all those boys, complete lookalikes. So what happened is that he manifested who he really was. All those cowherd boys, all those calves became Vishnu forms. Now Brahma was even more bewildered, more mystified, more disturbed. He was on the verge of a mental collapse. I mean, what's going on here? And of, not only that, but all the different, as it's mentioned in the verse, all the opulences, beauty, wealth, strength, knowledge, fame, renunciation, were in a manifest form that Krishna had created. And also the different potencies, the mystic powers, anima, lagima, mahima, prapti, all of these mystic powers took on a manifest human-like form. And not only that, but then there are the elements, the earth and water and fire and ether. And they took on a manifest form. And the mind, intelligence, false ego, they took on a manifest form. All of them were doing what? They were having a maha kirtan. Really, rip-roaring. They were clapping. They were singing. They were dancing. It was an incredible, amazing sight. And that was just about had it. Brahma couldn't deal with this any further. Krishna, seeing this, decided that he would give Brahma a break from this manifestation of yoga maya. So what he did is he withdrew the yoga maya potency, and gradually allowed Brahma to come back to his normal, ordinary understanding of who Krishna is. See, when he was in a yoga maya, he was wondering, he's like a person in the mode of passion. Is he equal to me or not? Am I equal to him or not? This is not Brahma. If we go through all the prayers of Brahma in the past, throughout the Bhagavatam, he's humble. He's surrendered. He's sacrificial. He's pleading. He looks up to Krishna. He venerates Krishna. He glorifies Krishna. He loves Krishna. He doesn't test his power against Krishna. So here we have this situation where Brahma then returns to his normal, peaceful, loving, kind self. And we will see, especially in the next chapter, where Brahma begins to utter the most wonderful, amazing, beautiful prayers of bhakti, in which he considers himself so small, so insignificant, so worthless compared to Krishna. And he apologizes. He regrets what he has done, namely acting, trying to test his master. Student doesn't test the master tests the student. That's the way it works in school. So, the important point is that Brahma slowly but surely comes back to his true and real consciousness, which is the consciousness of love of God. He's a pure devotee of the Lord. And as a pure devotee of the Lord, first of all, he bows down, he puts his foreheads at Krishna's feet. Tears are flowing down his cheeks. He has deep affection for Krishna. He wants to be forgiven. He begs for forgiveness. This is the real Brahma, and this is what we have to emulate, not the earlier Brahma who is under Maha Yoga Maya. So Brahma begins to talk in those prayers, and he begins to talk about how anyone with power, anyone who has great value in a society or a community, anyone who is illustrious or is glorifiable, as he himself refers to himself, like myself, all the demigods, they all look up to me. They all bow down to me. They pray to me. So I got puffed up. Anyone who has that will get puffed up. But the solution is, and it's so important, I like giving this talk because it reminds me of what I must do, because if I don't do it, I will fall down, like so many sannyasis have. Most of the sannyasis in this movement over the years have fallen down because they failed to do just what I've talked about. They failed to give the glory, give the reverence, give the honor, give the distinction, give the glorification. Prabhupada, it's yours. Whatever people are seeing in me, you gave it to me by your mercy, by your grace, by your love. And therefore, if I give this to you as my love offering, as Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do it as an offering unto me. In this way, you'll be freed from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me in this principle of renunciation, you will come to me without a doubt. So this is Krishna's promise. And if we all heed that wonderful instruction, this is not for me, this is for you. And we often have to accept the fact that our natural tendency is to keep it. And if we keep it, we poison our soul. In other words, you put poison over the soul. That's the covering. I'm great, I'm wonderful, I'm marvelous. And what happens is that if we are in that mentality and somebody insults us, or somebody downs us, or puts us down, or somebody looks down at us, or somebody criticizes us, we become upset, we feel threatened, we feel our little false ego is about to shake and totter. How to avoid this? No false ego. Then there's no shaking. Then there's no threat. Then there's no difficulty. Then there's no problem, because we know who we are. We're down on the ground. Lord Chaitanya says, we should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking ourselves lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige. And she should be ready to offer all respects to whom? Others, yes. And if we are in that mentality, there can be no fall down. Fall down comes by drinking the poison. Going up means spitting out the poison or getting rid of the poison and simply holding on the humility, the modesty, the unassumingness. I'm nothing. I'm insignificant. I'm worthless. I'm useless. But with Krishna's mercy, so many wonderful things can happen. So many people can become self-realized, God-realized. And I beg you, my Lord, to use me as such an instrument so that I can feel the joy, the happiness, the fulfillment of watching others become God-realized. That is my joy. That is my happiness. That is my goal. That is my all. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhuji. Bring the mic, someone, please. Now we have to get the microphone so people on the internet can hear your question.
Class Maharaj, I have a question and a comment. The question is, what means Aja in the purport?
It's defined it's actually defined in the purport as I'll find it. The word Aja means Maya in this, or mystic power. That's how it's defined there.
The comment was, did you mention that a student shouldn't, how do you phrase it, about his teacher?
Could you talk a little louder, please?
Student shouldn't question his teacher. But before...
No, I didn't say didn't question Krishna. That was not what I said.
What did you mention?
I said... That the point is that should not test the teacher.
Yeah, shouldn't test his teacher.
Question, he's supposed to. Yeah. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively. Go ahead.
It's one time I heard Prabhupada in a lecture saying that ideally an aspiring student, disciple, should travel with a guru for a year. Then the guru can test the disciple, and the disciple can test the guru. Once you take an initiation, then no more.
Yeah, so I would like to clarify that point. When Srila Prabhupada says that his disciple should test the guru, it means he should observe the guru.
Yeah.
That's what it means. Not he should do something like Brahma did, where he take something from the guru and see if the guru can find it. So that's the idea. Look, watch the guru. Watch how he speaks. Watch how he acts. As Arjuna says, what are the symptoms of a person whose consciousness is steeped in transcendence? How does he walk? How does he talk? How does he sit? How does he do? So Krishna says, when a man gives up all varieties of sense gratification, which come from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified finds complete satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada, as you know, was the perfect example of this. There was never a moment that he didn't want to hear about Krishna, talk about Krishna, think about Krishna, night and day, 724, 24/7, it was Krishna. And if you wanted to talk about Maya, leave, please. I don't want to hear this. He wants to hear about Krishna. So thank you for your question, for your point, Prabhu. Any other questions? No? Yeah, please pass the microphone to whoever wants. Mataji? Yes.
I thought a great deal in my life about when people fall down, that it is due to pride, certainly. But then I've also observed that sometimes it also has to do with...
A little louder, please.
So it seems to me that it sometimes also has to do with their having their relationships with their god brothers in balance. That, I mean, of course, that's a pride issue, but also to be able to have emotional intimacy with other people. That I think that's a key element for being able to remain in your position. You know, that your emotional needs are met, and that would be in relationship to senior god brothers who are of your caliber. So I was just thinking that's also a very key element for you know, being able to remain in whatever ashram you're in.
In relation to god brothers, god sisters, the position of each and every devotee should be one of eagerness to serve them. That's our position. And if we are eager to serve them, eager to please them as our service to Krishna, it doesn't stop at the god brother and say, Krishna says, whatever you do, do it for me, he said. He's not saying do it for the... Yes, do all these services, but don't do them in a vacuum. Do them for me. Because I am your mentor. I am your creator, so to speak. I am your manifester. I am the one who will give you God realization. So yes, glorify your spiritual master to the max, because your spiritual master is representing me, Krishna says. And if you do this, I will be pleased. And being pleased, I will give you my grace so that you will continue advancing. So, yes, we must show respect to one another. We should show honor to one another. We should show appreciation to one another. We should be grateful to one another, because all of us are helping each other in the process of developing God realization. And feeling that you're helping me, you're helping me, you're helping me. When I have that, how will I respect, how will I interact with you? With a feeling of gratitude. And if I have gratitude, you will feel gratitude towards me as well. And that creates a harmony. It creates a serenity. It creates a pleasantness in the relationship. And when we have that kind of peacefulness, it's very easy to go on doing devotional service. So I think it's gotten late enough.
Thank you.
I want to thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.